And this is episode number 4 of Studio 526M, the digitally authentic show of rants, raves, and reviews, all packed concisely for digitally minded students, faculty, and even industry professionals. I am your host, once again, Professor Michael Harper, recording from my office, 526M, on the beautiful Utah Valley University campus in Orem, Utah. And on this episode, I thought I would go ahead and use the two remaining segment types that I haven't used in the last three episodes, and that being our spotlight and our readings segment types. And on the spotlight, I'm going to be interviewing one of my great buddies here from the digital media program, Michael Wiz Wisland. Now, he does some really fantastic work with our students, but the one thing he does really well is audio restoration. And so we're going to have a good conversation with him and listen to some of his work. And then on readings and segment two, where I'm going to dive in and talk about two books that I believe are critical for you students here in the digital media program at Utah Valley University and anyone who is doing design. They're awesome. And I'll explain a little bit about why I think that every designer should have these in their bookshelf. But before we move on to our first segment, again, we are sponsored by none other than the digital media program here at Utah Valley University. I am very partial, of course, to this program because that's where I work. And secondly, Bluehost again and the Spoke program, they are a proud sponsor of the show. They actually host the show. And we really, really love working with these guys. Follow the link if you're listening to the enhanced episode from iTunes. And you can go and get signed up if you're a student and get an absolutely stellar deal. And we really appreciate everything that Bluehost has done for our program, Utah Valley University, as well as for the show. And for Newsstand, I just came across this new product that Qualcomm has just come out with, or at least announced. It is called Gimbal. It is context-aware and proximity-aware to make consumer engagements much more pleasant. Now, it could go overboard and be a complete wash. However, what's really unique about this is that Gimbal, for example, if you had the University Mall here in Provo, Utah, or it could be any mall, of course, they decide to outfit their entire system in storefronts with this option. It allows people to go into a store and Gimbal will sense the user and can send messages based upon their proximity. It could be just close to the store. It could also be the fact that they're walking in the store, and they say it can actually be as close as 1 foot away from some target item. It could be a pair of shoes. It could be stereo equipment. It could be a mic. It could be a phone. It doesn't matter what it is. Pretty cool stuff. We've talked about this in previous classes, but this is the first time I think that we've seen a major push, especially by Qualcomm and other big partners that are out there in the smartphone industry, to really kind of pull this together. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details, but you need to click on the link, students. Go and check this out. If you're listening to the enhanced episode, you'll see the link there. Go and click into it, and then let's talk about this in class. There are some fantastic opportunities here media-wise. You know what? It only takes a creative mind to come up with an absolutely fantastic idea. So let's see what you come up with. And on segment one, our spotlight segment, I thought again I would bring one of my really great buddies here from the digital media program at Utah Valley University, Michael the Wiz Wisland. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great, and I'm honored to be the first guest on your podcast.
Yes, we decided to rev up a new show, and Studio 526M, believe it or not, is my office.
Yeah, got a view of the whole inside of the building here.
Yes, we've got the window open so students can see what we're doing. And so you're a little bit nasally today. You got something going with the throat. So what we're going to do is
our favorite thing.
Bring in some soda.
We've got this is crisp, clean 7-Uppy.
This is gourmet stuff, though. This is out of an older style bottle, and it is, it's more retro.
Listen to that fizz.
Not bad.
Not bad. What are we talking about today, Michael?
Well, we're going to talk about audio restoration. I know that's one of your fortes. This is a question, though, and a lot of our students probably don't know, unless you go over it with them, and at least the other students who aren't in the digital audio emphasis won't know this. How many other programs in the country actually focus in on audio restoration?
Actually, there's very few, especially on the creation side of the programs that do the audio restoration. University of Denver is the big one, and there's very few outside of that.
Wow.
That are major players in audio restoration. Other programs that are user schools, such as Pro Tools, schools, they teach audio restoration using the software, but they're not teaching how to create that software.
Yeah.
It's two different games there. So very, very few in the creation.
So why do we need audio restoration?
Well,
someone's going to ask that question. Well, what is the big deal?
Right. Well, anything that is in an archive somewhere has some sort of artifact that needs to be gotten rid of.
And so we're looking at formats.
Yes.
Old
formats. Well, we even have trouble in today's modern recording techniques. Things can go wrong. Audio can be distorted by being too loud, so there's distortion. It can be recorded by accident too quiet, so there can be hiss. And also there can be hum and buzz in some recordings. So even modern day, recordings done in really good digital equipment can have faults that are treatable by the audio restoration softwares.
But of course, we're dealing with, a lot of what you're dealing with right now is stuff that goes way back.
Right, way back to the beginning of recorded audio. So, yes, anything that the different medias have different artifacts. If it's optical, you can get clicks and pops from the dust on the film soundtrack. If it's records, the needle can pick up clicks and pops in the grooves, so those must be removed. Those are what we call impulsive noise. Then there's the background hiss, which we call statistically white noise. And then there's hum and buzz, which we call periodic noise. It has some sort of period with it, a hum or a buzz, stuff like that, needs to also be removed from these recordings. So those are the three main categories that we go after with different techniques.
And of course, formats that we'd be looking at where those techniques would be applied, we're dealing with, vinyl records,
mm-hmm.
right? And all the various types.
Right.
And then we get back into reels.
Reel-to-reel, tape machines, cassette tape.
And then we go way back, which is the stuff that you're really diving into with the Green Album Project, which is cylindrical discs. Or
right.
Not discs, but cylindrical
recordings. Yep.
And
Edison made the first recordings on wax cylinders. And they were literally etched into the wax and then duplicated and sold. This is all the way back in the 1890s. And
wow.
And so there's a panoply of cylinder recordings out there that have not been restored to the digital age. And so that's one of my projects. I call it the Cylinder Project. And we're kind of bent on preserving that era, which is very poorly represented, by the way, because most folks don't even know what a cylinder player looks like. Or if they saw a cylinder, wouldn't know what it is.
Wouldn't know what it is.
And so, they think it's some sort of napkin cuff decoration.
And they're very fragile.
Yeah, typically.
And then the other side of it is getting a player. I know you've had problems getting the player. And then the needle or the apparatus used.
And if you do transcribe these things, you're pretty much limited to sticking a microphone in front of an old Edison horn. So it sounds tinny and horny, and then that's not an ideal transcription. So what we're trying to do is to replace the Edison diaphragm attached to a horn concept and go straight to electrical transcribing of the cylinder itself.
Yeah, and I know that you have been working with Gary Hanna on this apparatus, right?
Yes, he's a very creative mechanical engineer.
And you actually got it working now.
We do have it working. It's not perfected. The needle hops up and down on it. So Gary Hanna is actually going back to the original Edison designs and looking at the lever arms that were used.
Wow.
And it's such a clever apparatus. So he went back to the original Edison patents, and he's looking into sort of reconstructing the playback mechanism. And then at the last moment, we stick in an electrical transducer, where the horn output would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can transcribe electrically straight from the cylinder and have a much, you know, whatever's left on that cylinder, we'll pick it up.
Now, I know you supplied me a before and after, two files, a before and after. And which one was this?
The song is a very popular song from probably around 1913 called It's a Long, Long Way to Tipperary.
And this isn't the typical song that you'd catch our students listening to.
No, it's amazing how 100 years goes by and the music has changed so much it's not even recognizable as popular music.
Yeah. But I think what's really needed, it demonstrates of what you're capable of doing when you do audio restoration. And so before we actually listen to that, or at least let the audience listen to a before and after, why is it important that the students are learning this material? I mean, what are they getting out of, you know, the skills and I mean, why? Well, why is it such a big deal?
Audio restoration is going to become a very huge business as movie studios and record labels go back into their archives and begin to restore films and records for the next generation. You know, of course, the CD spawned a whole bunch of those, and the DVD spawned a new push to go back and re-release.
Yeah, but I find that some of those that I've purchased that were, you know, supposedly restored are just terrible.
By today's standards, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just
so
like,
we need to go back to those archives, retranscribe them, and clean them up with the more modern restoration software and re-release that stuff. You know, there's a lot of great music covers from 1890 till the end of the vinyl era that needs to be restored and cleaned up and re-released for newer generations.
Let's go ahead and take some time and let the audience listen to the before and the after, and then we'll get back and talk about some other things, okay?
The cylinder was electronically transcribed with a phonograph needle, and then we're going to play the results after we cleaned it up with software.
Okay, well, here we go.
Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day. As the streets are paved with gold, sure everyone was gay. Singing songs of Piccadilly, Strand and Leicester Square, till Paddy got excited. Then he shouted to them there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye. Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day. As the streets are paved with gold, sure everyone was gay. Singing songs of Piccadilly, Strand and Leicester Square, till Paddy got excited. Then he shouted to them there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Piccadilly. Farewell.
All right, Mike, so, gosh, you know, that's probably the first time I'm not our students, well, some of our students, but a lot of people who are not part of our program who are listening to the show, it's probably the first time they've ever heard a cylinder.
Right.
So, well done. I personally think that's just some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, you play the raw one there and the restored one. It's considerable what we can accomplish in terms of getting rid of clicks, pops, and just the background noise and make them listenable again.
So not only have you been doing cylinders, you've also been doing some different stuff with vinyl.
Vinyl is a big deal.
And you've got a humongous vinyl collection.
I do.
So I was over at your house. I think it was when I was over at your house and you said, hey, take a listen to this thing. And we had a good time listening to some of the stuff that you had restored. And I thought that I would go ahead and put that on the end of the show. just so it kind of be a nice outro. And I'll have to see how the audience responds. Feels about putting that on the end of the show. And I even told the class today, as I went over the final structure of this episode and let them listen to it without having, you know, all the other components for the episode completed. And I had them, I said, what do you guys think about this? And they loved it. And I said, you know, I wonder if I'll do this like every fifth episode, put in just something unique on the end so that my audience kind of anticipates actually having something funny. Because you've given me some absolutely weird stuff.
Oh, yes. And I can supply that for you for the next 50 years. So yeah.
I know you can.
So no problem.
Keep sending it my way. But I really think that as far as your work here and the stuff that you do, I mean, it's fantastic. And I hope that the students in our program, and I know a lot of them do because I talk to them on a regular basis, but even the students who are in my emphasis, dealing with mobile, you know, development and design work, I know that they do have a love for it. And even though that's not their focus, they do enjoy it. And they get a kick out of it. And so, you know, you've done a fantastic job here, and I can't tell you how cool it is just to work with you.
Well, it sure is. Sure is a lot of fun.
We do have a lot of fun here, do we not?
We do.
And students always ask us, Guy, you know, why'd you guys get into this? And I'm like, well, we're living a dream. It may not be the highest paying when we're here at the university. Right. It's not.
It's all about passion. You can tell if you're passionate or working with a passionate person because they can't not do it.
Yeah. And we love teaching and we really love introducing our students to just really cool stuff. And I think the audio restoration stuff is kind of that pinnacle of I'm an audio geek.
Yeah.
Right? It's you because you love it.
Especially if you have any history in you at all, it sure is an awful lot of fun. You can learn an awful lot about history just by listening to archival recordings.
Cool.
The jokes they made and all that, all the references.
And some of it's not very politically correct.
Yes.
It's way out.
It is definitely a little flashlight on life and times. Yeah.
I've got a few of those. I might, maybe, guys, those who are interested and those who are listening, maybe in about five episodes, episode 10 or so, watch out. I'll throw in one of these that is not politically correct. And I'll get away with it because it's all about research and we're at the university and you'll know what the intention is, not to, you know, hurt right. anybody's feelings, but it is there.
It is a sign of the times.
Yeah. So, well, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And for those students who are working with you, you know what? Great things are going to happen to those guys when they're out and doing things in the industry. So awesome job.
Thanks for having me on and enjoy this Homer and Jethro novelty from the 1940s.
There you go. Listen to the rest of the episode and then beware at the end. Well, it's time for Tomology, of course, and I thought I would consult the Black Book. And lo and behold, we have quite a topic here. Yeah, it'll kind of ruffle some feathers. I like doing that. Okay, students, we talked about this many times over the last few years. I usually introduce this idea of internet versus the web in class. And I thought I'd throw it out. The reason why is because someone came up to me the other day outside of school, and they were a developer, and they were talking about, oh, the web. And I said, you got to, you know, in a nice way, I said, you got to kind of separate these two. And he goes, why? They're the same thing. I said, no, they are not. So what is the difference between the internet and the web? Quite simply, the internet is the connectivity that we have between our machines and our servers, how it ties all together. The web runs on top of the internet. It runs through a protocol. The web is this idea, but it also functions as protocols. So when you have a web page, it runs through HTTP. Hypertext Transport Protocol. There are other protocols that help even our web functionality actually exist. FTP, File Transfer Protocol. Without FTP, none of our HTTP stuff would be running. So, you know, the bottom line here is that we have to separate these two. These protocols run over the internet. Web is a component of that. And where it gets dicey is when we start pulling things in, like when we have apps and we're developing for iOS, for example, a lot of people will say, well, you're developing an app in Xcode and it's going to run over the web. Well, is that really true? Does it really run over the web, or is it just connected through the internet? You see what I'm saying? Now, I'll leave you with this to go and research more. I wanted to bring it up because it is something. It's not just semantics. There is real value in understanding the differences between these two terms and where they exist and where they blend together. So I'm going to leave that to you. Go and research this a little bit. But the bottom line is there is a difference between the internet and the web. And on segment two, it is our first ever readings segment, and I picked two books out that I feel that are absolutely critical for my students to have. To be honest, I believe they're the ultimate reference guide for students in design-related fields. And of course, it's for professionals, obviously, too. But I think students really need to pay attention to both of these books. This first book is called Universal Principles of Design. And it really is what I consider the Bible for my students, especially as they get done with the interaction design class that we have here in the digital media program at Utah Valley University. We also have our Principles of Digital Design and our Principles of Web Design. Those are just three classes that I'll name at least at the lower level before students get to their portfolio reviews. And once they have it, they need to keep it. And it's the reason why is because it's this beautiful and coordinated effort to make sure that all of the different principles that are out there design-wise make it into the heads of students to really pay attention to how they design. And it's designed by intention. It's not just that looks good. There's reasoning behind not only the design, but the practical understanding of the various principles that are at work in order to make sure that somebody who is participating in an experience, regardless of what experience it happens to be, whether it's a web page in the browser or whether it is an app on iOS 7 or whether it's a digital publication like a magazine, we have to really pay attention to the principles to guarantee that our design is by intent. And so I have a lot of different terms here that are listed. Man, I've got a lot of stuff. But let's listen to one here. They've done a nice job, and the reason why I've liked this is because they've got it laid out in such a clear manner. They always end up going by alphabetical order, of course, and then they have a nice definition right up front, and then they'll usually have at least a couple or three or four paragraphs explaining the term or the principle, and then on the right-hand side, they always give excellent examples of its utility. So, for example, here's one that a lot of people would say, oh, well, that's audio, signal-to-noise ratio. Well, the problem with this is it's not just signal-to-noise ratio for audio. We have signal-to-noise ratio for our designs, too, our visual designs. So listen to this definition, and then we'll quickly discuss it. The ratio of relevant to irrelevant information in a display, the highest possible signal-to-noise ratio is desirable in a design. Now, of course, our goal here then is to maximize the signal, which means clearly communicating information with minimal degradation, and then minimizing noise so that we're removing any unnecessary elements and minimizing the expression of necessary elements. That's just an example of one of the principles. And I have, for example, in the principles of web design, I have the students take three sets, and there's four principles in each set, and they have to not only find examples out in the real world of each one of those principles, they have to then explain it and how that principle is not only applied, but how it affects the design. And it's really wonderful watching the light bulb come on in the heads of students when they take this book, again, which I believe is a Bible for our students, and they really start applying it to designs that are out there. Someone's vacuuming. It's kind of late tonight. Anyway, well, I'll just keep on going. And so my second book, and I think that is absolutely and clearly one of the best books that's out there on color. This author, her name is Leatrice Eisman. In her second edition of this, it's called Color, Messages and Meanings, a Pantone Color Resource. Now, the first reaction of some students or even listeners will say, well, Pantone, what does this have to do with digital? This is print. Well, the bottom line here is that this book is so well laid out and is so well thought out, anybody can use this and apply color, or at least get a great start and you know, really utilize the information here to make sure that the design and the colors are working together. So let me just quickly talk a little bit about the book. First of all, I really appreciate the fact that Leatrice Eisman takes the time to look at colors specifically, lay out the messaging, lay out the utility of a color, and she provides really excellent examples on the various pages for each color about how it's used and how well it can actually communicate to a reader or someone who is selecting a product in packaging, like let's say it's wine or coffee or a bag design or even in print. Now, we can take all of this and apply it directly to our web space. There's no question about that. And what I really appreciate the fact is that she moves on from looking at the colors specifically, and then she takes the time, and which I really appreciate, she talks a little bit about not only brand identities and things like that, but she really dials in this idea of the color wheel and gives probably what I feel is one of the best short, quick reference materials out there on color wheels. And whether it's going through monochromatic or complementary variation, analogous complementary variations, such as split complementary, etc., she lays it out very quickly and effectively details them or defines them. And so I usually use this as a drop-off point to go into Adobe Cooler and to actually demonstrate how the color wheels function. What I also really appreciate is the fact that she goes in to help explain the ideas of the rank and order of color and talks a little bit about the importance of having a dominant color, a subordinate color, and then an accent color, at least starting from there. Of course, you can have more colors, but the importance of how you utilize these ranks and order of colors in order to message in the design. And then she talks more about creating the moods with color combinations, and the rest of the half of the book is just color combinations based around moods, complexity, assertive, skyscraper, zesty, sentimental, woodland, and creating some of these color swatch panels with all of these different variations around this one here, eye candy, lots of Valentines. I think of, going to Bed Bath & Beyond, but a fantastic resource for my students. And I think if you're a professional that's out there or a student in another program around the country, look into this book. It's well worth its price. And when people see it and they're serious about design, if you're serious about design, you will recognize it right off as a useful resource and you'll want one. So those are the two readings that I have for you. And I would like you to think about that. Both the links, of course, are part of the enhanced episode stuff through iTunes. If you're on the MP3 version, just go and look for them through Amazon or wherever you want to purchase it. But there you go. Universal Principles of Design and Color, Messages and Meanings, a Pantone color resource. Go get them.
Now Bill McCluskey was a husky, healthy, handsome lad. And McCluskey had a pretty little girl by the name of Pearl. But McCluskey, big and husky, stuttered very bad. So when he wanted her to marry him, he told her brother Jim,
You to tell her, cause I's to stuttering, always could get him to Dutch. When I hear the Papa Parson say, will you honor and obey? I'm afraid that I will answer, yes, give me a piece of pie. When I'm in her poo-poo-pa-potter, I take on and a hoo-hoo holler, and always can get into Dutch. And when I pa-poo-pa-poo-pa-poo around her, I'm afraid all around her. You to tell her, yes, you to tell her, cause I stutter too much.
Well, that does it for episode 4 of Studio 526M. I am once again your host, Professor Michael Harper. from Utah Valley University, and of course, our sponsors, the digital media program at Utah Valley University, and our great friends at Bluehost.com and the Spoke program that is a great option for students and educators to get a great deal on hosting. And until next time, have a great day, have a great weekend, and my gosh, have a great Christmas, will ya?
Now her big brother told his mother what McCluskey said. Now she said, go ahead. And so he telephoned to McCluskey's home. Billy grabbed a taxi cab right to his sweetie's door. He saw the family upon the porch and he started in to roar.
You telecalls, I stuttering. Always could get into Dutch. When I hear the Papa Parson say, will you honor and obey? I'm afraid that I will answer, east house,
give me a piece of pie.
When I'm in her poop-poop parlor, I take on and the hoo-hoo hollering.